Good evening. So thank you for coming. This will be the last Emet Hashem of the medical ethics shiurim. And tonight I thought we would take a look at a whole bunch of very interesting, relatively new to really, really new shilas. Some are real practical halachic shilas that have come up already today, and some are looking ahead into the near future. So just to give you an example of stuff that's looking ahead into the near future, but it's not there right now, these would be shilas in terms of organ transplantation that aren't currently capable of being done, but there are talks, at least in the medical literature, of doing so. The most interesting and probably the most furthest away is talking about an actual brain transplant. The technical details of doing a transplant of a person's head to another body is already being talked about in the medical literature as being potentially possible for a person to do. Now, again, I'm not saying that this is anywhere near close to actually being accomplished at this point in time, but that would be probably the most phenomenal halachic question discussion if you were to actually be able to transplant the brain, essentially the head of a person, onto another body. So while there's talk of this in the medical literature as being a potential reality, there are surgeons and neurosurgeons that are claiming that they technically think that they could begin to do this, but that's not yet a halachic realm shaila, but certainly that would pose the most interesting medical shailas that one could talk about. But in the world of real organ transplantation today, there are a number of very interesting shailas that have already come up and that pose very difficult questions both in the secular world as well in the medical world. And one of the most interesting ones is the transplantation of a uterus, of a womb, from a woman who doesn't need her uterus anymore, is being taken out for whatever the purpose. Sometimes they're taken out for medical reasons, other times they can be taken out as part of some other general procedure, or in this situation, a woman who says, I don't need my uterus, whatever the reason, and she wants to donate, or if a person is brain dead, and they wish to donate the uterus. So there have been, I think to date, 7 such uterine transplants that have actually been performed into women who are fertile, or at least potentially capable of being fertile, but they have a technical reason they don't have a uterus. So they have actually done this, and women have given birth with a transplanted uterus inside of them. So that brings up a number of very interesting shailas as to who is the mother. So that's a relatively easy shaila. The poskim have a very, very big controversy. It's not clear who is the mother in surrogate motherhood when you're using the donor egg from the biological mother, and it's being placed, implanted into the surrogate mother. So that's a very, very controversial area in halacha. Let me make that clear. You have a husband and wife, Yaakov and Rachel, that unfortunately Rachel can't hold the pregnancy for whatever the reason, but she has perfectly viable eggs, and she's able to get pregnant. And today, with in vitro fertilization, they can take the zera from Yaakov, and they take the egg from Rachel, and they in vitro fertilize the egg, and then they would normally implant it back into the person. But for whatever the reason, she doesn't have a uterus. She has a problem. She can't maintain the pregnancy. She has a heart condition, so pregnancy would be dangerous for her. Whatever the situation is, they now implant this perfectly good embryo into another woman, the classical surrogate mother. And then, Baruch Hashem, 9 months later, so that surrogate mother gives birth. So she is the birth mother, but she's not the genetic/biological mother. So how does halacha view on a Sunday in June when you have to buy a Mother's Day card, who do you give the card to? How does halacha determine the mother in that situation? So this is a very, very important shaila, because who the mother is will determine, does the child need a conversion? Let's say the mother, the birth mother, is a non-Jewish woman. So is this child going to be eventually converted and needs a giur? Or do we say, no, the egg and the zera, the father's sperm and the mother's egg, were both perfectly good Yiddish couple, and therefore the child is born Jewish. So this is a very, very controversial area in halacha, who is considered the mother, and that will determine Jewishness. That will also determine, in some situations, Kibudova aim shilas will also determine potentially Yerusha type of shilas, inheritance types of questions. And the poskim over here basically have not come to a clear-cut conclusion. And different poskim say different piskei halacha over here. I would dare say that originally more of the poskim said that it's the mother who donated the egg, the genetic mother, is the birth is considered the halachic mother. And today I would say there are many poskim that disagree with that. They're very interesting midrashic sources as to where do we define, how do we define the surrogate mother. Some use the example of Dina and Yosef and Leah and Rachel, who was the birth mother, whose genetic mother. There are a number of very interesting stories to suggest that the genetic mother of Dina was actually Rachel, and the genetic mother of Yosef was actually Leah, and that they were switched. So this was a classical case of surrogate motherhood. So we know in halacha that Rachel is the mother of Yosef and that Leah is the mother of Dina. So some want to use that as a raya, that you go by the birth mother. Others say, no, you go by the genetic mother. So this is an area of great controversy in halacha. What do we do, Lamaisa? Lamaisa, so many poskim in this situation, if the birth mother is not Jewish, will ask that there be a giur l'chumra, that you'll do a conversion over here, which may not be necessary, but will satisfy all the opinions. She said, okay, so what's the big deal to do that? It's a girl. What's the big deal to do a giur l'chumra? So a big nafkamina would be, if this is a girl baby over here, that you're not allowed to marry a kohen in that situation. If it's a boy baby, you're going to do a bris milah anyway, so at the time you do the bris milah, so you do the bris milah l'shem geiris, or l'shem bris milah, whatever one it is. So that's not such a problem. The boy can marry whoever he wants. There's no problem with him marrying a female Cohen, a Bas Cohen. There's no din over there that a Bas Cohen cannot marry a convert. So it really would be a problem. So there we go l'chumra the other way, and we say no, the kid would not have the privileges of the father being a Kohen. Wouldn't allow that child to be considered halachically a Kohen. That could be, again, l'chumra and l'kula. So it depends. In certain things, we would not let the kid get tamei lemeis, because maybe he is a Kohen. But we wouldn't allow him in that situation to go and do duchening and do other things like that. But he wouldn't have some of the advantages of being a Kohen, but he'd have most of the disadvantages of being a Kohen. So for Yerusha purposes, that's also machlokis. If there's no other children, so then it's less of a problem. When there are other children, the other children can say, bring me a raya that you're his child, and then in halacha we'll go and view it as such.
What happens if just the opposite? When you have the egg, and fertilized egg from somebody else?
So the same thing, all the exact problems work the other way as well. So this is an area where there's no clear-cut consensus among the poskim. Doesn't make a difference which way it works. The genetic mother, the one who donated the egg, could be Jewish and it's implanted in a non-Jewish surrogate, or vice versa. You take an egg of a non-Jewish woman and you implant it in the Jewish woman. She doesn't have her own eggs. She has a perfectly good uterus. But she doesn't produce eggs for whatever the reason. She had some illness that doesn't allow her ovaries to work, or her ovaries were taken out, whatever the situation may be. So that's also a whole separate question. Here you have great, great controversy in the poskim when you do artificial insemination. Moshe said it's better to do it from a non-Jewish person if you're doing it from the male zera. As to whether when you take the egg, is it better to do it from a Jewish woman or from a non-Jewish woman? Again, there are many, many poskim that have different opinions on this. One of the major problems is if you're taking the sperm from a Jewish person or you're taking the egg from a Jewish person, there's the question that maybe she'll end up, or he'll end up marrying a half-sister or a half-brother down the line. So some argue it's better to take it from a non-Jewish person. This way they're not halachically related. Even if he were to marry, two brothers and sisters were to convert, min hadin, they would be allowed to marry each other if they were both goyim from birth. We don't allow that if we know about it, midrabbana. But we wouldn't have to be concerned about it in this rare situation, because halachically it would be acceptable on the daraisa level to marry anyway, because they're considered, when they're megayer, when they convert, they're considered a ger katan shenol adami. They're considered like a brand new entity. So whatever their birth or biological status was when they're megayer, they convert, that no longer applies. So again, this is one of the most interesting and difficult areas in halacha. Yeah.
So
I don't think it has any effect on halacha, because that would only be for certain financial purposes. Would you go dina de machusa dina? So they make a contract. This is an area of great thought in American law as to how to do this. There can be different laws in different states, but normally they try to work out some sort of a legal contract that the surrogate mother agrees to give up the baby beforehand. Again, what happens when she changes her mind? She holds the baby for the first time and she says, I ain't giving it up. So then you unfortunately have legal battles and controversies in American law as well. And some of these are dragged out for a very long period of time. Yes? Okay, so the naming of the child, that's not a problem. Whatever you do to the child right now, whether they need a gerus or don't need a gerus l'chumra, so whatever the child is, so that's who the child is. That's not a problem. When you say the mother's name, which mother you say? Okay, it says Shaila. You can always say Bas Sara. You can't go wrong over there. Those are more emotional questions. The more halachic questions is if the child is the child of so-and-so, the child of so-and-so, they can't marry the relatives of the other one, or they could theoretically marry the relatives of the other one. So we go l'chumri in that situation. We don't let them marry the known relatives of either one, assuming both are Jewish. Then you don't have a problem of geiris, but if you know that the birth mother is Rachel and the genetic mother is Chanala, so they couldn't marry either of their relatives that are forbidden from the mother. So this is a very interesting and very controversial and is still yet to be explored area of halach in terms of final psak. Yes? So you can say kaddish, that's never a problem. You could do avelus, aninus, and all those things, but you wouldn't, the one area where there may be a problem, this is for based upon adopted children. Adopted children are allowed to adopt all the customs of avelus. The one thing that they can't do is that they can't not learn Torah. If it's a boy, a boy who was adopted by, mother, father, one of them passes away at 120, and the boy is sitting Shiva now, so he has all the hanogas of Shiva. He can sit on low on the floor, he can grow his beard, he can do all the things. The one thing he's not allowed to do is say, I'm parted from learning Torah, because that he can't take upon himself. But all the other hanogos, all the other customs of avails he could. When he comes to shul, he can daven for the yomid and say kaddish, but he theoretically wouldn't have the right to push somebody else away who's a vadai chiyuv. But lemaisa, I know we practice this here in the shul, when it's come up in a number of situations, we don't discriminate, and I don't use that in a bad sense, but we're not looking to make emotionally cripples out of people to say, no, you're adopted, you only knew these parents for 75 years, they were your parents, and now we're going to say they're not your parents. So we're not looking to make people be very upset, so we'll normally put them in the rotation. And assuming that all the other people are accepting of that. Again, if somebody wants to be machmir and say, no, I halachically have the kadima, so then technically they would be right, but the shul is also allowed to make up whatever customs that it wants when it comes to those priorities and hierarchies in terms of who gets to daven for the omen. But at least in theory, there's no problem with them davening for the omen, saying kaddish, all those things. You can technically do that for anybody that you want. A person could be, quote, hired out to say kaddish for somebody else. Sometimes you have a son-in-law that says it for the wife's parents because the wife's family was all daughters or whatever the situation may be. Since we're on the subject of this, who's the mother? So you have an interesting new knach nowadays, a brand new thing only in the last couple of years, the recognition that not all the genetic material is passed along the way we always classically thought it was passed along. We used to think that your genetic material was contributed, the 23 chromosomes from the father and the 23 chromosomes from the mother, and that was the 46 chromosomes that a kid got, 50% from mom and 50% from dad. That's not true. It's close to being true, but now we know that there's something called mitochondrial DNA, and that is purely 100% contributed by the mother. And that has to do with certain actual muscular diseases that can be theoretically only transmitted from the mother. And now we have the capability, when we do in vitro fertilization, that we could theoretically take out the damaged mitochondrial genes and put in the genes from a non-defective woman. And now you have the halachic possibility, if you implant this into a surrogate mother, of having three mommies. You have the genetic mother who contributed the 23 chromosomes in her egg. We took out her cytoplasm, the mitochondria from egg. We substituted that. So you have the second mother, the mitochondrial genetic mother. And then you have the birth mother. So Hallmark will be very pleased. They'll triple their business. You have three mothers, they cards in this situation. So again, in halacha, we don't necessarily view the mitochondrial mother as having a absolute halachic status as a parent. But it does pose interesting questions, and this really leads into the next shaila. Are you allowed to do stuff like this? Can you go and start playing God? Can you go and start fooling around genetically? We now can do things that were not really possible years ago. There's technology called CRISPR, where you can really do very, very fine splicing of genes and picking out the damaged area and inserting another person's DNA into that. And theoretically, you can insert animal DNA into that, or what people are talking about doing, this is at the cusp of reality, it's not there yet, in taking embryonic cells or taking an embryonic kidney, implanting them from fetuses that are either being aborted or that aren't being allowed to grow beyond a certain stage, and implanting them in animals and having human kidneys grow theoretically in these animals, so you'll have a supply of human kidneys. So that's not there yet. But this is, again, the technology is almost at the point. What would the halacha say about these types of chimeras, human and animal hybrids? So I haven't seen any clear-cut tshuvas on this. So that's an interesting subject for the future, but it's not that far away. The technology is there right now. In many parts of the world, there are ethical bans on doing such animal-human gene splicing. But not everybody's ethical, and not everybody's following, and it's only a question of time before somebody does do some of these things in a test tube and then does it in the human body. What is halachically, yeah, I'm sorry? So that what now halachically is absolutely a shaila, and it's come up hundreds, if not thousands of times at Shaarei Tzedek, where they have a Beis Din of great Gedolei Yisrael posking on every one of these shailas, is when people want to do what we call PGD. And that's basically what you're doing, is implanting the exact type of genetic embryo that you want. So if somebody, Rahman al-Itzlan, has a certain type of a disease that's a recessive gene. So let's say, we'll use example Tay-Sachs, but hopefully most people get tested before they start going out on dates or at early in the stage, and you can identify who would, Rahman al-Itzlan, have a potential to have a Tay-Sachs baby and not let them get married. But unfortunately, they don't always get that testing early enough, and a couple sometimes gets married without having such testing, and now they find out that there's a 1 in 4 chance that any child born from their relationship will have a Tay-Sachs baby or some other horrible machala. So what do you do in that situation? So once they're already married, so then there are certainly halachic permissions to go and do various types of implantation. You take out the zera from the husband and the wife, you look at it under a microscope after you have fertilized embryos, you may have 10 embryos that you fertilize, and you do genetic analysis. You say, no, these 3 or 4 have the Tay-Sachs gene inside of them, we're going to discard those embryos. So the first shaila is, are you allowed to discard embryos outside the human body? And the answer is yes. Halachically, we do not view them as alive. So there is no halachic problem for us, as opposed to the Christian right, and as opposed to the United States government with a lot of the embryo bans on research. So we do not view an embryo that is outside the human body as having a halachic status of life. So much so, this shaila comes up, what happens in Eretz Yisrael, they have these freezers where they contain embryos and it's Hashem for implantation, if the electricity were to go off on Shabbos. So is it pikuach nefashos to save those embryos? And the answer is no, it's not. They don't have the status of nefashos. So therefore, there is no pikuach nefashos. And this shaila has unfortunately come up. So there are dinim derabbanan. You can maybe ask a guy to go to the power, etc., to save all the eggs. But a yid would not be allowed to be over in issa daraisa in that situation because it's not a question of pikuach nefashos. In halach, we don't view those embryos as actually having the status of life. But that's a tremendous kula. For us, we can discard them. So you can fertilize in vitro 10, 20 eggs and get the exact genetic makeup that you want. Whereas the Christian right, for example, would not allow that. They don't approve of in vitro fertilization. It's kineged their understanding of, quote, halacha. So therefore, for them, this is absolutely forbidden. For us, it's absolutely mutter, and it can be a tremendous source of comfort to a family that's not able to have children that would be guaranteed or as close to guaranteed as being healthy. They're going to have a 1 in 4 chance of having horrible machala, so we can now guarantee that we won't give them that machala. And halachically it's allowed, and you could actually do research or do all sorts of other types of scientific investigations on those cells. It's not a problem in halacha. What that, however, does also bring about is, okay, we're going to select not to have a Tay-Sachs baby. Oh, Baruch Hashem, all the poskim say that that's not a problem. But what happens if there are, we don't have this yet state of the art, but let's say there was a person that had an aggressive personality, right? And we can figure out the gene for that. Well, let's not give that kid that gene. Let's splice that gene for the aggressive personality and put in the righteous individual's personality. If we could get to that point in time, so we could figure out that there's certain mental illnesses that you could also genetically do. So again, if it's serious mental illness, so that would not be a problem. That would be halachically permissible. That's no different than a serious medical illness. But what happens if it's a gene for early Alzheimer's disease? Would you be allowed to say, let's say you implanted an embryo, or a mother is pregnant with multiple births, and you're going to now do sampling to see what the genetic statuses of the babies are. And you find, if we have the ability to detect the gene, we do have certain genes that we can detect. For example, Huntington's chorea, we can detect the gene for that. The kids will be fine till they're 30, 40, maybe 50, and then they're going to have a horrible, fatal neurological disease called Huntington's chorea. So would you be allowed to abort a child like that? Would you be not permitted to implant a child like that?
Certain cancers.
Certain cancers, the BRCA gene, exactly. Would you be allowed or not allowed to go and implant something like that? Is that a problem? Could you select l'chatchila and not implant such a gene? So to select l'chatchila and not implant such a gene would not be a problem, because you could pick a different one to implant. So that's, again, not such a difficult halachic shaila. You have 20 embryos, so why implant one that has a disease that won't be a problem until they're 30, 40, or 50, when you can pick a gene that doesn't have that automatic problem? So the question becomes, what happens? Well, I'd like to have a boy. I have four girls. At tzaddik, you want to do it for the mitzvah of peruvu. What happens if, you know, you have nine boys, and you want to have a baseball team, so you want to have 10. You want to have a short center, right? You want to have a minion. So is that a valid reason to go and pick the sex? So that already becomes a much more controversial area in halacha. So there are poskim that would allow, certainly if there's any sort of a genetic problem with boys or girls, that there's certain diseases that we don't understand how they're transmitted, but this is a disease that only goes in the boys in the family, or this is a disease that only goes in the girls in the family, so that would be certainly a valid reason to go and implant one certain sex versus the other. But most of the poskim would not allow you to go, just go willy-nilly and say, you know, we want to have a boy, we have one child, and we want to have another child, we want it to be a boy. So in that situation, Poskim would be against doing something like PGD for that reason. But once you have all the cells out already, and you can choose which one to put in, so that might not be a halachic problem, more of a hashkafic problem.
Who would make that call?
So in Shaarei Tzedek, they have a Beis Din that it tells them what they're allowed to do PGD for and what they're not allowed to do PGD for. And Rabbi Steinberg Shlita was one of the major people in this area that sits in these panels, so he's one of the people that sits on that Beis Din. So he says they have a whole bunch of criteria that they use. They'll look at a whole bunch of social as well as psychological criteria, and certainly looking at the medical aspects of it, and they'll make a decision. Will they allow l'chatchila to do PGD or not in certain situations, depending on the request? He said one of the most interesting requests that they had was a family that wanted bedavka to have a girl and not to have a boy because their family has premature baldness. So that sounds like it's nothing. They said, no, they have children, the boys, when they can't have payas and they falls off because of this illness, it was devastating to the boys in their family. And that they had a real significant problem psychologically when all the other Hasidish or Haredi kids had payas and they did not. So they preferred to have a girl. So what would be the psak in that situation? That's a significant psychological distress. So I believe he said that the Beis Din in that situation, possibly that would be a valid reason to specifically select the girl rather than a boy. They felt that was enough of a halachic reason to do so. Now, again, every one of these is open to a tremendous amount of discussion, but that's why they have a Beis Din with Gedolei Yisrael overseeing this Beis Din to make sure that things are done kalocha. They also will only... So that's a separate thing. You have to establish the custody. That's a whole separate halachic issue to make sure that there's a verification through Edim who the zera is from, who the egg is from. That's a whole separate discussion that you must have a clear-cut custody. It's like to do with police, with evidence. You have to have a clear-cut chain of custody. So you have the same exact thing. You have hashgacha, so to say, that's on, that this is the egg, this is the fertilization, this is the whole process, to make sure that you don't have any halachic problems in that area. And finally, the last thing that I'll say on this subject, and then again, because I have to daven Maariv in 2 minutes, so we're going to stop now, and I thank you all very much for coming, that is, we spoke a tad about this last week, what happens when you do these types of implantations, and you always try to put in a whole bunch of eggs to make sure that you'll get at least one that will implant. So you put in the olden days, they put in 5, 6, 7, or 8, and they'd hope 2 or 3 would take, maybe only 1 would take, they would be very happy. Today, the technology is better that more are taking. So number one, halakhically and medically, they don't put in as many as they used to. But what happens if you put in 4 in the hopes that 2 or 3 would take, and all 4 take? So then there is a concept in halakha of this selective reduction. And then they're allowed to do genetic testing to see which one they want to reduce. Again, should you start using all of these other minor criteria, that poses a great deal of, we want to have a 6'2", blue-eyed, blonde baby. So then, assuming we have the ability to do that genetically, the poskim would not be in favor of something like that. But they also, and this is the last point I'll make, they also will only do this on married couples. They won't do this for a single woman. And that brings up a whole separate question about women who unfortunately don't find the shidduch and they want to go and handle that. That's a separate talk I gave last year about egg freezing. It's a whole separate interesting halachic discussion. But in this situation, they'll only do it on married couples where obviously both couples consent. The whole separate question is, what happens when you have zera from a dead person? Let's say the husband passed away, the wife passed away, and you still have their seed, and the remaining partner wishes to do that. We'll have to come back some other time and discuss those shilas. So I thank you very much. I apologize. I want to run to Maariv next door. Anybody else that wants to run to Maariv as well?